than a star. And it flows through you, and it flows through me, and I love you so much more.
There you go, boys and girls. That goes back to, that was a request by one of our associates. Too Much Heaven by the Bee Gees. I never really was into the Bee Gees, but that song is a beautiful song. And that's going to go out to our she-wolves, because this is Freya's Day in the bunker. That's right. And it is the 15th. No. Yeah, the 15th of August, 2014, Freya's Day, another beautiful day here in the Midwest, or at least this part of the Midwest. I just finished my 2-mile walk. I started walking again because they tell me I've got a little hitch in my get-along back, and they say, if you don't walk, you got a problem. I used to walk all the time. So we're getting back into the walking, and because if you sit down for a couple of hours doing the show, that's not good. But I figure if I walk the same length of time, or not maybe the same length of time, but nearly the same length of time I do the show, if I walk a lot, well, that'll counterbalance the sitting. At least that's my theory for today. I may have a new one tomorrow, man. Yeah. Well, let me see here. They're still going at it in the Middle East. Oh, did you think peace was going to break out in the Middle East? Never going to happen. With religious fanatics, no matter what part of the Abrahamic religion they are, and even the Buddhists, they do some pretty bad things too. So I'm sort of inclined towards the Shintoists myself. That was the religion of the military of Japan. Anyhow, let's see here. I was going to read you something here, sort of dedicate at least a little of the time to one of our martyrs, one of our guys at the right wing, at least the ones I hear, never talk about. That's Joe Tomasi from his pamphlet, National Socialist Revolutionary. Born on April the 15th, 1951, Joseph Charles Tomasi devoted his entire life to the cause of National Socialism and his race. As a young boy, he developed a fascination with the World War II information, Uncle Adolf, and the Third Reich. While still in his teens, he became an ardent admirer of the leader of the American National Socialist Party, Commander George Lincoln Rockwell. After making contact with Rockwell, he joined the youth wing of the American National Socialist Party. They call it the American Nazi Party. I don't believe in using that word Nazi. I think it's self-demeaning. Tomasi quickly rose through the ranks of the party, and by the early 70s, he's one of the top lieutenants of Rockwell's successor, Matt Cale. Cale put him in charge of running the party, now known as the National Socialist White People's Party, in California. Of course, that's long gone now, too. Tomasi set up his headquarters in the town of El Monte and began to shake things up all over the Golden State. His bravery and organizational ability, intense fanaticism, and natural charisma made him a born leader of men. He was very similar to Bob Matthews. Very similar personalities. Tomasi and his West Coast stormtroopers took to the streets in Rockwell fashion to confront the enemy and to spread the word under his leadership. California chapter quickly became one of the most active and productive state chapters of the NSWPP. Tomasi led his men on street demonstrations and protests. He distributed vast amounts of party literature. He did everything in his power to promote the ideals and principles of the American National Socialism and to reawaken the fighting spirit of the white man. But nothing worked. The great majority of so-called white American men continued to sit back and watch television while Jews plundered their economy and poisoned their children's minds with communist, capitalist propaganda, and niggers and Mexicans turned their cities into nightmares of crime and filth. Tomasi became frustrated. He grew sick and tired of the political games of the party and its worn-out leadership. He realized the old ways of doing things would never work, just like Robert Matthews. The only way to change things for the better was to declare war on the vile anti-white system and carry out unconventional warfare attacks against the ZOG and its collaborators. He used the word terrorist here. I don't accept the word terrorist. That is a buzzword. It's a media-created term. It's overworked, and it's really unconventional warfare. This was not a new idea by any means. For years, elements within the party had been talking about going to war with the system. There was a lot of big talk, but little action. Tomasi was determined to do more than talk about revolution and race war. He was ready to plunge the system to its death. Tomasi was inspired by the terrorist or unconventional warfare guerrilla activities of the left-wing organizations, such as the infamous Weather Underground. He began to read all he could get his hands on about these subversive communist terror gangs. He immersed himself in the art of political urban terrorism. He began to talk about the strategy for revolution with his closest comrades in the party. Many of them agreed with him. Many others thought he had lost his mind. Matt Cale and most other top leaders of the NSWPP were horrified by Tomasi's left-wing and deviationist activities. At the 1973 National Convention of the NSWPP in Cleveland, Tomasi was reprimanded for his actions and threatened with expulsion from the party if he continued to preach violence to the rank-and-file stormtroopers in California. But by now, Tomasi held Cale and the other reactionary party leaders in contempt. Sound familiar? He believed that they were stuck in a time warp and that their outdated Prussian tactics would never attract younger and more militant idealists to the National Socialist cause. The only way to excite the youth was through action. Tomasi was determined to steal the thunder of the weathermen and develop a revolutionary mystique for the National Socialist movement in America. He also wanted to create and maintain discipline in the ranks and punish those who betrayed or brought dishonor on the National Socialist cause. Ignoring the orders of Cale and other reactionaries, Tomasi outlined, in other words, the right wing, outlined his plans of creating the NS Underground in an extraordinary manifesto called Building the Revolutionary Party. In this pamphlet, he attacked the NSWPP leaders for their outdated tactics and lack of revolutionary fervor, and discussed his own ideas on how to bring the anti-white system to its knees. Only by fighting by any means necessary will we be able to effect political change. We cannot effect political change by projecting a phony, bureaucratic, Prussian image and constantly spouting unrealistic daydreams such as imagining the masses would ever want to emulate stormtroopers. It just won't happen. All revolutionaries and actual assumption of power are instigated by the efforts of a tiny few. Instead of trying to educate and organize people who don't see it our way, we write them off as enemies and neutralizers of the National Socialist Revolution, unquote. In times of revolution, just wars, and wars of liberation, we must love the angels of destruction and disorder as opposed to the devils of conservatism and law and order. To hell with all those who block the revolution with rhetoric, revolutionary rhetoric, or counter-revolutionary rhetoric. We will not make our most eloquent statements in courtrooms and at press conferences, but in the streets of Jew capitalist America. You notice early on he's talking about capitalism, which of course the right wing never wanted to do much condemnation of. On March 2nd, 1974, 43 of Tomasi's stormtroopers assembled at the meeting hall in El Monte to hear their leader announce the formation of the National Socialist Liberation Front. Tomasi outlined his new revolutionary program to the enthusiastic crowd. He told them that the old party was corrupt and reactionary. A mass strategy was useless. The time had come to go underground and wage guerrilla warfare against the system. The NSLF would be the vanguard fighters of the white revolution. See, this was over 20 years before Robert Matthews came along. Instead of wearing uniforms in public and passing out literature that nobody read, the liberation fighters of the NSLF would devote all their time to building the National Socialist Revolution through armed struggle. In a pamphlet written by Tomasi shortly after his historic meeting in El Monte, the basic action program of the NSLF was outlined. National Socialist ideology and political training, additional training in guerrilla warfare, explosive and demolition, military assault weapons, and gas warfare, along with electronic communications and electronic surveillance techniques, are taking place. Classes in first aid, police evasion, techniques of being a POW, and escape are also taking place. The NSLF is divided into combat units. A combat unit consists of 3 liberation fighters and a unit leader. Sound familiar? No one combat unit knows who constitutes another combat unit. An NSLF combat unit member is trained as an efficient guerrilla fighter, dedicated to destroying the enemy no matter who that enemy may be. On the surface, he has no uniform. He could be a bearded, long-haired sitting next to you on the bus, or a clean-cut store clerk. He could be anyone, anywhere. Sound familiar? Sometimes you guys think these are new ideas that I've been talking about. They're getting pretty old, actually. The NSLF has the best elements gathered together from the past 20 years of the National Socialist activity in the United States. It has gathered experienced communications experts, military firearms experts, along with the finest liberation fighters available. Each member understands the new concept, the new strategy, and the tactics needed in order to effect political change. Tomasi instructed his fighters to purchase the following equipment: a high-standard 7-shot, 3-inch magnum shotgun, and 1,500 rounds of ammo, a 45-caliber automatic pistol, and 1,000 rounds, a semi-automatic 308-caliber military assault rifle, and 5,000 rounds, an M17 gas mask. So you see, we've been down this road a long time ago, but the right wing keeps diverting with reactionary nonsense away from the facts and the reality of the situation. In addition to revolutionary manifestos and orders concerning military equipment and tactics, Tomasi devised several propaganda leaflets to inspire National Socialist revolutionaries around the country. His most famous leaflet was the Political Terror Flyer. This particular leaflet has become arguably the best loved piece of propaganda in the American NS movement. Almost every other National Socialist organization formed since 1975 has slapped its address at the bottom of this brilliant leaflet. It is a classic, a masterpiece of revolutionary propaganda. Another leaflet distributed by the NSLF dealt with the role played by local police departments in oppressing white racialist groups and enforcing illegal anti-white laws of the system. In this leaflet, Tomasi made what was to become his most famous statement on law and order and National Socialist Revolution. Quote, "We do not wish for law and order, for law and order means the continued existence of this rotten, rip-off capitalist Jew system. We wish for anarchy and chaos, which will enable us to attack the system while her big brother pigs are trying to keep the pieces from falling apart. We wish for a situation so confused and mixed up that we can go after those bastards responsible for the anti-white policies and attacks against our people which now exist. Such chaos would allow us to be so intensify our assaults that we could very well plunge the entire system to its death. For us to support those police who maintain the rules the wise men make for the fools is absurd and suicidal," unquote, which I agree and endorse 100%. Tomasi published 2 newsletters for the NSLF, the National Socialist Review and Siege. The latter name he borrowed from the title of the book about the Weatherman Underground. In these publications, Tomasi openly boasted of his intentions to overthrow the system through violence and terror or unconventional warfare. In fact, he actually printed a scoreboard of illegal guerrilla acts carried out by the NSLF fighters, unquote. The NSLF also operated a National Socialist bookstore in El Monte and maintained a radical phone telephone hotline. I see this was before computers, boys and girls. Day after day, Tomasi and his lieutenants would urge the National Socialist activists to go underground and wage war to the death against the Jew, the liberal communists, and their nigger attack dogs. Tomasi told his listeners that the crack of gunfire is the only reality the masses care to pay attention to. The revolution belongs only to those who are prepared to suffer the consequences of disrupting the silence of darkness. We must prepare to seize the time. National Socialist Liberation Front began its war against Zog in earnest in the fall of 74. In California, New Mexico, North Carolina, and several other states, the NSLF combat units went into action. In October 74, several niggers and white traders were beaten and terrorized on the streets of Los Angeles by NSLF revolutionaries. One nigger pimp and his white whore were beaten up in broad daylight. The slut was handcuffed to a light pole with a sign around her neck which read, "I'm a nigger lover. I screw niggers. I deserve to die," unquote. In Albuquerque, New Mexico, NSLF guerrillas set fire to an airplane owned by the Jew official of the NAACP. In Hollywood, a Lincoln Continental belonging to a TV executive known for his fanatical promotion of nigger culture was set ablaze. In December 74, an NSLF organizer in North Carolina was involved in a full-scale gun battle with local police who attempted to violate his rights and remove a tape-recorded telephone message from his house. Tomasi urged his soldiers to go to North Carolina and help this organizer wage war on Big Brother pigs. In February 1975, the NSLF began a major bombing campaign against selected left-wing targets in the Los Angeles area. The guerrillas bombed the headquarters of the Socialist Workers' Party, blew up the headquarters of the Puerto Rican Marxist Organization, and bombed the offices of a Jew public television station. Tomasi openly took credit for these acts of white patriotism. He boasted of them in the pages of his newspaper, calling the victims on the phone and told them he was responsible for the attacks, and created propaganda leaflets from newspaper headlines about the bombings. In one leaflet called NSLF Scoreboard, he warned the system that there was more to come. The NSLF's most famous attack took place in Santa Monica, California. About 3,000 Jews, communists, niggers, capitalists, and assorted other filth gathered in the civic auditorium for the purpose of paying homage to the infamous Soviet spies Ethel and Julius Rosenberg. As the subhumans sat listening to one red speaker after another, praising these two Jewish rats, NSLF operatives suddenly ignited a tear gas grenade. Pandemonium broke loose. The crowd went nuts and raced for the exits. The unholy gathering abruptly ended in mass confusion and panic. The incident made news all over the country. The National Socialist Liberation Front had quickly emerged as the vanguard of the NS revolution in America, just as its founder and commander had predicted it would. Tomasi was planning many more bombings and other guerrilla attacks against Zog. He had a handful of loyal and courageous followers. The intelligence and the guts to keep up the pressure and the fanatical hatred of the system to fuel his revolutionary zeal. He was only 24 years old, and I remember at the time meeting him and about four or five of his hardcore L.A. people. They were all dressed in Levi's and Army surplus jackets, and you couldn't have picked them out from a radical left winger. But the Zog decided to put an end to the life of this brave and noble white hero who dared strike back at the evil system that was determined to annihilate his race and culture, just as the corrupt, monstrous, wicked U.S. government had silenced Commander George Lincoln Rockwell 8 years earlier. It now sent assassins to destroy Tomasi. On August 15, 1975, Joseph Charles Tomasi was shot to death by a Zog hitman on the streets of El Monte in front of the NSLF headquarters, not far from his home. Well, in fact, that headquarters up there actually was a house that had belonged to Tomasi, who he had given over to the corrupt reactionary National Socialist Party, with Cale leading it. And then Cale engineered a coup against Tomasi and got him tossed out of his own house or headquarters because Tomasi had the audacity to have a girlfriend in the place once in a while and have a few drinks of beer in his headquarters. That was the excuse that the leadership, Cale, used. Let me see here. These reptilian creatures of darkness succeeded in silencing Tomasi and breaking up the NSLF, but they will never be able to destroy the spirit and legacy of Tomasi. Well, the right wing has done a good job by ignoring he ever existed, just like they're trying to do with Robert J. Matthews and all his men. That's why I don't understand people that are still messing around with the right wing and who claim a revolutionary spirit and respect for the martyrs of our race. I don't understand people that are playing both sides of the street. The spirit of Joe Tomasi lives in the hearts of every true national socialist in this country. He is a hero to any white person who possesses an ounce of dignity, pride, and common sense. Tomasi showed us the way to victory. He threw away the old, outdated rule book and pioneered the move towards armed struggle of the National Socialism. When we finally win the war against the Jew and establish an Aryan Republic on American soil, statues of Tomasi will be placed beside those of George Lincoln Rockwell and Robert J. Matthews in every public square in the land. Hail Tomasi. And that's the end of my reading of that. So why don't you go to these Johnny-come-lately right-wing radio shows, call in and say, what do you know about Joe Tomasi? What's your position on Joe Tomasi and Robert J. Matthews? Yeah, call up the Barnes Review people, all of those people. And I know what you're going to get. You're going to get gobbledygook and waffling, or outright condemnation, like this preacher down there in Arkansas, Tom Robb, who got on television and said Robert Matthews and his men were common criminals. This is why you have to get the right wing out of this thing. Move away from it. Get away from it. They're not our people. They may say some things that we may like to hear, but they're not our people. And unless you understand that, you're never going to get anywhere. Most of the so-called patriots, when it comes to Joe Tomasi or Bob Matthews, will sit around and talk about, well, it's too early or it's too late. Well, even I say that sometimes. But it's only ever going to be talk. Only ever going to be talk. Oh, well, he did this wrong. He did that wrong. Oh, he failed. No, it was a stepping stone, and if his model would have been followed closely by new leadership to take his place, who knows what would have happened by now. There's really no National Socialist Liberation Front that I know of existing in North America now. It appears to have almost died at the death of Joe Tomasi. All we've got now is the same old warmed over stuff from the right wing. Well, Tomasi's dead, now we'll give you the National Socialist Movement. And we'll go out in the streets and do exactly what Joe Tomasi said was over and done. Same way with the Klan. The right wing will say, oh yeah, we'll give you the Klan again. So you go out and do the same thing that even the radical leaders that were in the Klan said was over. This phase is over. Robert Miles couldn't have been a better man and had been a member of the Klan and operated his own operation for many years. Said, it's over. Bury the Klan. It's done. They lost their pushback. They lost their ability to get any respect because we ended up handing out newspapers instead of being unconventional warriors. Yeah, I lived all through that. I participated in all that stuff. And I did all the things that Tomasi and Matthew said wasn't going to work. So now I know what works. So you just have to wait, bide your time, or do what you want. You know, Ben Smith up there in Chicago, wasn't it Ben Smith? That decided to do a number, and he went out and did it. Nobody wants to talk about Ben Smith anymore of the COTC. I think I'll dedicate today to him. I think it was Ben Smith, because he went into direct action. Now people would say, well, that was foolhardy, didn't change anything, but did it change anything? It might have changed just a little, because these things are layers upon layers, actions upon actions that build over the years. And so Tomasi's there, the Klan's there. Tomasi took some clues from the left wing and some of the clues from the old right wing, put them together. Everything evolves. People say there's no evolution. They're wrong. Everything evolves. Politics evolve. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of times the evolution of politics gets stalled. It gets into a cul-de-sac by doing the same thing over and over and over again. And that's what the reactionary right does. Scared to death of adopting anything to the left. It might work. Yeah. How about that? Just a thought for you. Just imagine if every white man that died in World War II, or white woman, had two white kids. How much different things would be today. You ever think of that? Everybody's talking about all these great battles, and they did this, and they did that, and they did that. But no, really, they killed off the best breeding stock of the race throughout Europe and throughout Russia. Just think of that. The millions of people that died in that stupid war, if they'd all had two white kids. Oh, what a different world this would be today, especially if we get the military-industrial complex off our neck and quit falling for these reactionary, predatory capitalist wars and wars of occupation they get us into. Anyhow, next time you're wanting to cheer on some war movie where the U.S. troops or the British troops, the French troops are wiping out Germans, or the Germans are wiping out Russians, and back and forth, vice versa. Just stop and think if all those people dying would have had two white kids. That's what you should be thinking about. Two white kids or more. I did my share. I have six. No, I'm not a Catholic. They say I'm a passionate Protestant. No, I'm a passionate atheist now.
Christians have already been killed since the Islamic State began its offensive a few months ago. Dozens of Yazidi children and elderly have starved to death since the ethno-religious minority group was driven to take refuge on a mountain in northern Iraq earlier this week. Mike, people are now urging Obama to stop the genocide in Iraq. Well, why is Iraq better than Palestine? It's better because it has oil. He will bomb ISIS from the air in Iraq, but he won't agree to help Palestinians. He is, however, sending more tools of death to Israel as the poor darlings are running out. The hypocrisy here is unbelievable. Also, Britain and the United States and other Western countries are pressuring Palestine not to take Israel to the International Criminal Court. What chutzpah, huh? The U.S. is still saying Israel is their best friend and ally. So how can the U.S. be an unbiased arbiter for peace? There's that hypocrisy again. Roz. Yeah, what she's talking about is the gift that this filthy, murderous, pig bastard son of a bitch, have I made myself clear, Dick Cheney gave to the world. And that is the invasion of Iraq, the destabilization, the destruction, the creation of a non-state, a failed state, which gave rise to ISIS. And now Mr. Cheney has unleashed a force that might even worry him a little bit, because thousands of these minority religious groups, including Christians, Iraqi Christians, have taken to the hills in northwestern Iraq. The Yazidis that Roz mentioned, they follow an ancient religion that is an offshoot of Zoroastrianism, which itself, I believe, is an offshoot of Islam. But the Christians and the Yazidis have been told, as this ISIS terror band works, of Dick Cheney's spawn, works its way across Syria and Iraq, heading for Iran, I'm sure, that if you are a Christian or a Yazidi, you have a very short time to convert to Islam or they will kill you and your spouse and your children and everyone in your household. Which, by the way, is exactly what the Christians will say to the Jews when the Christians' drunken, psychotic Messiah shows up. It's in the book. It's in the Christians' book. The Christians will say to the Jews, convert or die. This is what the Islamists are saying to the Christians and the Yazidis. Convert or die. Isn't religion just goddamn wonderful? Isn't it just such an uplifting moral force? So the Obama administration, who has not dealt with the murder and the terror unleashed by Cheney and his puppet, George Bush. Dick Cheney should have been put in the dock. So should George Bush and that entire administration. Those sons of bitches should be in prison somewhere. So now Obama is stuck with it. So what's he talking about? Well, according to news reports coming in from all over the place, Obama is weighing direct military strikes, airstrikes, against this ISIS creation of Dick Cheney's. These are Cheney's attack dogs, or wolves, or zombies, or whatever you want to call them. This is Cheney's army. This is what Cheney unleashed. Why will nobody hold that son of a bitch responsible? Nobody. 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 The AP says President Barack Obama huddled with his national security team Thursday morning to discuss the crisis as the Islamic State group made further gains. Airstrikes in particular would mark a significant shift in U.S. strategy in Iraq, where the military fully withdrew in late 2011 after nearly a decade of war. In recent days, the Islamic group militants swept through villages in the north that are home to religious minorities, including Christians and the Yazidis. White House spokesman Josh Earnest has said the situation in northern Iraq is nearing, what's his words, quote, a humanitarian catastrophe. We are gravely concerned for their health and safety. What about the Palestinians, Josh? Sons of bitches. Why are we not dropping supplies to the Gazans? Why are we not dropping water and food and bags of concrete to the Gazans? Why? No, seriously, why are we sitting back on our, not you, not me, we have no power, you and I have nothing to do with this, nothing. I'll tell you what we have to do with it, continue to contribute our money, a portion of which winds up in the Israeli military. So you and I have nothing to do with this. There's no way we can stop it. No way we can mitigate it. We'll be back.
Just think, if before the civil war in this country, if we'd have knocked off the war stuff, not been a civil war, not been a First World War, not been a Second World War, and on and on. How do you think the white race would be doing now, considering no other wars in that period of time? All the people killed, all the white people in Europe, United States, and so forth, killed in these wars, including the Civil War here in this country. Where do you think we'd be by now? I think we'd be on Mars with high-rise buildings and apartments that probably way beyond. Maybe not. Maybe we would be in an agricultural society. So what? It would be a healthy white society. And, of course, if we hadn't let Christian fanaticism, Christ insanity, gain control over our lives, which is a major part of the problem, too. Probably even a bigger problem than the predatory capitalists, because it's a finagling of religion and so forth that's used to gain their ends in many cases, including getting tribes to war against each other. Sunnis and the Shiites over this dumb thing about who inherited Muhammad's mantle. It's important to them, I guess, but they're still warring over it now. So anyhow, just think about that. All you people out there keep talking about how wonderful white guys fought in these wars and all that kind of stuff, and what noble guys we had and all that kind of stuff, and many of them were. But what if they had never gone off to fight? Just think of the United States without the Civil War. Just think. We'd have straightened out this black problem at least much better than we've done it so far. Like Lincoln said, knowing that the black race should be freed from captivity and slavery, but at the same time, these two races, the white and black race, cannot live on the same territory in peace. They're just two different products of evolution. Period. They can't do it. Now, either you'll totally mix, which is happening a lot now, that's for sure, or at some point there'll be an end to this. And unfortunately, it'll have to come to violence. It's not going to be straightened out any other way. I'm sorry. Sorry, right-wingers, right-wing reactionaries. You show me a plan to straighten this out that doesn't call for silly stuff like the right wing is back for years. You know, we got to get a guy to run for office. We got to get a Rand Paul. He'll straighten things out. He can't even get his own mind straight. He says on one day, he says, we should cut off all the aid to Israel. And then the press gave him trouble, and he says, well, I didn't really mean that. I meant sort of, I've never, Jesus. These are the leaders. These are the leaders that they want to put into office. And he'd never say, save the white race, for sure. And there's none of the rest of them up there will either. So any kind of right-wing reactionary blabbing about voting ourselves out of this mess as a race. And another thing, we should be about saving a lot of those white people who live in the Middle East. You know, I've seen a whole lot of photographs of people living in Iran and other areas of the Middle East that are white. They're white, they got blue eyes, and in many cases blonde hair and so forth. I had an associate, a friend, who actually walked on foot all through the Middle East from one end to the other. And he said, Tom, there's white people all over that area. In the Atlas Mountains and so forth, they're white. He walked all the way through it, walked. He said, there's white people all over the place. Why aren't we concerned about saving those white people and bringing them out instead of bringing out the non-whites and all that kind of stuff? I'll bet a lot of you people don't know there's a lot of whites in the large number of whites in the Middle East. You know, you see even some of the footage and you'll see them. And you know what is really sick now is the murder of Eastern Ukrainians by both sides. Here again, basically, white people have chosen up side to kill each other. And you know, both sides have got these great arguments and the whole bit. And some of the guys I've talked to are very pro-Russian. Well, you can be pro-Russian all you want, but I don't want to see you promoting killing the people in East Ukraine. Look at the pictures. These are white people, most of them, and they're being bombed out of existence. Little kids and everything, little blonde-haired kid, blue-eyed. Is anybody crying over that? No, I hear the right wing keep talking about, oh, we got to side with Putin. He's our boy, you know. Or we got to side with the neo-Nazis that are working for the Kiev government. Pox on all their house to stop the killing of white people. Now, is that hard to do? Just lower your guns and go home. Whenever white people are killing white people, don't give me a shit. You don't have a position. You don't have a good logical reason for it. You can give me all the bullshit you want, but I ain't buying it. Like the movie, the jerk said, son, this is shit and this is shinola. You got to know the difference. And all these things like that, whenever these political power struggles begin, especially if it's in a white area, white people are going to die by the hundreds, maybe the thousands. Say no to this bullshit. Say no. If you want to be an Aryan socialist or a true Aryan or whatever, you got to be against this stuff. No time should you support anybody that's going to be white but killing white people. People that are criminal whites should be brought to justice, like Cheney and these guys, and hung by the neck until dead. But that's something that's needed, not wholesale bombing and blowing up people's homes, and they got no place to live, they got no water, they got no electricity or anything else. I don't hear many people here in the United States worrying about those people in eastern Ukraine. You know why? Because they're white. They're white. There's no excuse for that. There's no excuse you can come up with, and you can say, oh, well, they're Russian and they want to be separate and all that. There's no excuse for it on either side. Until we get that through our heads, we're never going to go anyplace. In fact, we keep retreating racially. Every year we retreat more racially. Well, looks like Mother Nature's going to take another swing at us. The cost of tackling the virus, Ebola, is also threatening to exact a severe economic toll on already impoverished West African nations hit by the epidemic. Well, they've been impoverished since the year one. In Nigeria, in particular, a more serious outbreak could severely disrupt oil and gas industry if international companies are forced to evacuate staff and shut local operations. Rating agency Moody's warned. Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it, boys and girls? What are they going to do if African countries are overrun with Ebola? You don't think those white boys in the oil companies are going to stick around, do you? Get ready for $10 a gallon gasoline. And don't forget, AIDS is still a disease that's killing hundreds of thousands, maybe millions, as time goes on. AIDS is not out of the picture yet. Neither is cholera, neither is leprosy, neither is many of these things. And all you Monsanto lovers who, from the companies like Dow that gave you Agent Orange and gives you Roundup for the farmers, and they have another one that's supposed to be more over a broader type insect killer. Well, down here in central Indiana, about 100 miles west of Indianapolis, they've got a new weed that's beginning to spread around through the countryside. It's resistant to everything. It won't, it's not, you can't get rid of it, I guess, any other way than rooting it up. And it's spreading fast. And none of the Monsanto Roundup or any of its offsprings can do anything about it. So it looks like if that keeps spreading, Indiana agriculture is going to be in real trouble. And, of course, we do have this disease that's moving around through the pig industry here in the farms in Indiana. See, the Mother Nature fights back. You want to put chemicals all over the ground, she's going to develop a weed that can't be killed. Because that's evolution. For those people out there who don't believe in evolution, weeds are a perfect example. And plants that develop a way of resisting all your chemicals and so forth. Plants are not made to be covered up with chemicals. It's not supposed to happen. You're supposed to farm normally, the old-fashioned way. My father even proposed and believed in still doing your farming with the horses, to where he felt that tractors and mechanized machinery were not good for the land, just running over them with the mechanized machinery. So anyhow, that's another thing that we got to look forward to. Our food industry being screwed up by Monsanto. And they are environmental criminals, just as much as a war criminal. They're environmental criminals. And they spread their shit all over the world now. People are dying by the thousands because they can't raise food. They can't afford to buy this Monsanto seed and all that kind of stuff. Oh, man, it's going to get interesting. And I heard the other day Kaiser's show that he said Social Security is going to go bankrupt. Everybody else is saying how wonderful it's in good shape. He was talking 18 months on Social Security. Well, that's going to be interesting if it comes about. I don't know why he's put such a dire prediction in such a short time, but I'm going to look into it.
Before this slips away, because I missed it yesterday, a state of emergency. emergency was declared yesterday in parts of westernmost Canada after effluent garbage from a gold and copper mine tailings pond spilled into Rocky Mountains waterways. Spill estimates doubled since Monday when an earthen dam breach at the Mount Polly mine sent wastewater and mining debris from the pond into nearby pristine rivers and lakes. This is what Bob Kincaid is talking about, these tailings for coal, mountaintop removal. But it says, it's according to the French news agency, it says up to 10 million cubic meters of water and 4.5 million cubic meters of fine sand are estimated to have poured into Polly Lake, Hazeltine Creek, and Quesnel Lake. A government statement said, quote, the Cariboo Regional District has declared a state of local emergency as a result of the Mount Polly tailings pond breach in order to access additional capacity that may be necessary to further protect the private property and government infrastructure in the town of Lively. Anyway, people living in or traveling through the affected area were warned not to drink or bathe in the water in this entire region. Oh, by the way, it's a major breeding ground for salmon and is upstream from the mighty Fraser River, which flows through Vancouver into the Pacific. The water ban includes, quote, water recreational activities, drinking, cooking, bathing, etc. Use only bottled water until further notice. Pets and livestock were also included in the water ban. Imperial Metals Corporation, which operates the mine, says it does not know what caused the dam breach, but added that the breach has been stabilized and is being investigated. Local media said the 4-kilometer-wide tailing pond, 4 kilometers, 2.5 miles, pond, contained mercury, selenium, arsenic, lead, cadmium. What is it here? 10 million cubic meters of water. Let me do some quick. 10 million cubic to 4.3. Well, if I've got this right, 10 million cubic meters is equal to 2,640 million gallons. 2,640 million gallons. Maybe somebody will check that for me. My math, 10 million cubic meters. I say it's equal to 2,640 million gallons. Is that right? I didn't come across this item today, but Kathy did. It's from the Belfast Telegraph. Seems that an ISIS, or they're now calling themselves IS, the Islamic State. Yeah, I like that better than ISIS. ISIS sounds like an Egyptian goddess, you know. IS, a commander, an IS commander at a terrorist training camp in Iraq, north of Baghdad, was demonstrating to a class of would-be suicide bombers or militants, a big class. You know, can you imagine? Now, most of you, like I, have been to classes in high school, college, graduate school, whatever, and you watch the instructor, and he nowadays, you know, he'll do a video presentation or PowerPoint, whatever. But back in the day, you know, they would use chalk, and however, the professor would talk to the students. The room would be full of students, some of them paying attention, some of them not. So in this particular case, this IS commander at this terrorist training camp was showing his class how to deal with a belt packed with explosives. You're way ahead of me on this, right? And it accidentally detonated, blew him into so many pieces, they were using sponges to pick him up. and killed 21 of the trainees who were there, also 21 who were there to learn how to wear a suicide belt. Sorry. I'm sorry. Am I laughing? Yes. I just find that massively hysterical. I can't help it. People in there being trained to blow things up and commit suicide get blown up and die because the dork that is supposed to be training them, I don't know, hits the wrong plunger or something. Now this, you don't ever push on this. Why not? Because if you do, click, boom. And all of them gone. Jesus, God. I'm sorry. I just find that lay down on the floor and pound the pavement funny. Now, it's not just me. The accident was the source of dark humor for locals, according to the Belfast Telegraph, because suicide attacks in public spaces become an almost daily occurrence in Iraq. A guy named Arad Hashim, who works at a liquor store? Oh, that's right. What the Muslims do, they'll take a bottle of booze, pour it into a glass, dip their finger in, flick off a drop, because the Quran tells them they shall not drink one drop of alcohol or something. That's what I've heard. Anyway, Ra'ad Hashim, who works at a liquor store near the site of the bombing, burst out laughing when he heard the story. He said, quote, "This is so funny. It shows how stupid they are, those dogs and sons of dogs." End quote. He went on with the God stuff. Now here's a guy selling alcohol, so I don't know how he can talk about the Muslim God stuff, but he says, quote, "This is God showing justice. This is God sending a message to the bad people and the criminals in the world to tell them to stop the injustice and to bring peace. Evil will not win in the end. It's always life that wins over death." End quote. And another person in this area where this occurred told the newspaper, quote, "I heard this today when my friend rang me in the afternoon to tell me about it. He was so happy, as if he was getting married, which made me happy as well."
There you go, the Bee Gees fan. For the Bee Gees fan there, you got two of them. That's called Tragedy. We're out of here. Be back with you tomorrow on Saturn's Day. Yeah, 14-5, and remember to shut up. And hey, get your monthly donations in here. Yeah. For the Radio Show.